This is the Education Gadfly Show.
You know, Ty, Kathleen's right. She's definitely no Rahm Emanuel if she stays out of politics.
That's true.
Now, here's your host, Mike Petrilli.
Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute here at the Education Gadfly Show and online at edexcellence.net. And now, please join me in welcoming my co-host, the Rahm Emanuel of the education policy community, Kathleen Porter McGee.
No, do not put our two names together. Thank you. Not this week.
You know, Kathleen, people would be surprised. You know, former educator, mom. But, you know, when you're off the air, I mean, you swear like a sailor. It's amazing. You and Checker, you just go at it. I mean, it's like, it's like watching late night HBO or something. I don't know. Just kidding. That's not true. Hey, it's fun. You know, I always think of the pop culture. This week, I feel like what's in the pop culture is Chicago Teachers Union strike. I mean, this is really getting big news, not just in our little corner of the world, but all over the place. And I have to admit, I kind of like it. I like the attention. I like the attention. So what are your family and friends asking your opinion on this teacher strike because they know you work in education?
No, actually, we try to talk about politics and policy as little as possible across the family lines because there's a lot of disagreement. So we try to stick to nice things. Nice. Like this is my kid's first week at school, not last week. So we can be distracted by that.
Of course, it is difficult in your family because you have a school reform powerhouse family, don't you? I mean, your husband, the head of 50 Can, your brother-in-law, running all kinds of interesting mayoral academies.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too because I think that the many other members of my husband's family are not on the same page as those of us you just mentioned. So yeah, but it makes for some very interesting and great discussions.
The Porter McGee's, the first family of education reform. Yeah. Okay, a lot to cover, of course, including Chicago. Ty, let's play Pardon the Gadfly.
Well, speaking of Chicago, on Monday, the 25,000-member Chicago Teachers Union went on strike. Will this labor dispute have national fallout?
This is the big question, right? What do you think, Kathleen? What's your take on this?
I mean, it seems impossible that it wouldn't. Obviously, all eyes are focused on Chicago right now, and depending on how this falls, whether Emanuel gives more concessions to the unions or whether the unions have to cave, I mean, I think everybody's going to be watching and very interested in how this is going to play out.
Yeah. I mean, so first of all, in terms of the way the public views teacher unions, I can't imagine this coming out well for the unions, no matter what the outcome is, because it certainly looks, and all the reporting has stressed, that these teachers are pretty well paid. They work a very short day, of course, have summers off, and now they're asking for more money in the middle of a very slow growth economy, 8.2% unemployment. I mean, all of that, I think, is a tough sell. It's interesting. The unions have now tried to reposition themselves, saying, well, it's not really the money we're arguing over, although that's the only reason legally we're allowed to strike. It's these other things. It's the things that we care about, the kids. It's class size. It's air-conditioned classrooms. It's these other things that other people can relate to. Are they going to win that argument?
I mean, I don't know. I think it depends on who you're talking about, right? I mean, I think in some circles, it's only increasing the teachers' resolve to feel kind of at one with the teachers' union. So I certainly think if you're talking to parents in Chicago or parents across the nation, they would say, well, hey, wait a second, why now? Why couldn't you come to agreement? Why couldn't you put aside your differences to help our kids? But I think that there has been an increase in solidarity among teachers because of this.
You know, the other big question is politics. Will this have any influence on the election? You know, we're in this one of these tight elections where anything, you know, the weather, the wind, the butterflies from Mexico, anything could impact the election. And so the question is, how is this playing in Wisconsin and Ohio, two battleground states nearby? Of course, Illinois is not a swing state, not even near it. But these other ones are close. And so you say, well, are some of those undecided independent voters in Wisconsin or Ohio somehow influenced by this? And of course, they have memories of the other big union battles that have happened over the last couple of years in those two states.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of stay out of politics as much as possible and stay on the education side. So I don't know how it's going to play with the swing states, but I think it's certainly going to have a big impact in with the classroom teachers.
You know, Ty, Kathleen's right. She's definitely no Rahm Emanuel if she stays out of politics.
Huh? Yeah,
it's
true.
All right. Topic number two.
Teacher evaluations have been a sticking point in the Chicago conflict. Have education reformers pushed too far too fast on the issue?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely think so. I think that obviously being able to use student achievement as one factor in teacher evaluations is important. But what's interesting is that I think up until this point, the teachers' unions have been too, their contracts have been too limiting and too prescriptive. But now it's like we've gone too far too fast in the other direction and being super prescriptive and super limiting in how you have to use standardized test scores in teacher evaluations. And I'm not sure, first of all, that our standardized tests are there yet. I mean, I think that they should be used as part of it, but saying it has to be used as up to 40%, I just think we're on very, very dangerous ground.
You know, some people like to say, look, this is just an extension of the accountability movement. We started with schools, now we're finally getting down to educators now that we have the data to look at individual student test score results. The problem with that is a couple of things. I mean, first of all, it's one thing to be told your school is going to get a D on a state report card or might be, quote, in need of improvement under No Child Left Behind. Very different to be told you might lose your job because of the results of this. Second is, you know, since the accountability movement started, we've certainly seen plenty of teaching to the test and a lot of stuff going on in our classrooms that none of us are proud of. We have to acknowledge that this focus on test scores comes at a cost, especially when the tests are so easily gamed and taught to and cheated on and all of that. So, I mean, I think this is a real problem. My big beef with it is that it moves us away from the paradigm of the principal having a lot of authority that goes along with the accountability. That, you know, the way that I think about these things is more the charter school model. Hold the principal accountable for results and then let that principal make decisions, including how to evaluate their teachers. Now, by all means, principals weren't doing a good job of that in the systems they were in weren't doing a good job of that, so we need to raise the bar, give them more supports. But I worry that what we're actually doing is micromanaging the principals, and you're seeing pushback from that, and some of that pushback is very healthy.
Yeah, it's a great point, and especially because the principal's job is to create the team that best serves all of their students. And you can imagine a scenario where a veteran teacher teaching the toughest kids doesn't hit the exact target but does so much else to the culture, and they can use that veteran to in a variety of different ways to create the team that they really need to support the students in the school.
Wait, one last quick point here. You know, behind the surface, what I think a lot of this is about, everywhere I look, I see pensions. Okay, I mean, why are these veteran teachers in Chicago so worried about job seniority? It is because if you're a 20-year veteran or you're a few years away from retirement, you have a huge amount of pension wealth that is at risk. $1 million usually in most cases. And you are afraid that not only you're going to lose your job, you're going to lose $1 million. So you better believe it. They're going to fight like hell to keep that from happening. If we move to different kind of pension systems where they could, you know, just take that money with them, that would be different. Maybe that's got to be part of the solution here, is finding a way for teachers who are experienced, who do lose their jobs, be able to walk away with that pension wealth anyway. Okay, topic number three.
Kathleen, you recently coined a new term to explain why emulating great schools often fails. You called it the Xerox effect. How does it work?
Basically like this. Old Xerox copiers, you'd put something in and what would come out was a fuzzier and fuzzier version of the original. So it would never look exactly, it was never as crisp, never as clean. In education, we see this over and over again. We see high-performing schools, and the teams are all focused on student achievement. They're working together. So much is working really, really well. And then you see other people observing and saying, you know what's really working in that school? The particular curriculum. Or you know what's working in that school? Time management. Or you know what's working in that school? The way they're evaluating teachers. And then other schools try to copy some very limited aspect of what makes the first school successful. And first of all, the copy is just never as good as the original. There's always something lost when you become more focused on replicating a program than on driving student achievement. And also, too often, you're missing so much else that's going on at the school that's really driving student outcomes.
You know, Kathleen, it was a great piece and really perceptive. And I remember us talking about this a while ago. You had worked at Achievement First, which was all about replicating the Amistad Academy. And what you noticed was that Achievement First put in all kinds of great systems and efforts to replicate, and you were able to get a pretty good baseline measure of quality across the network. Mm-hmm. But you didn't get any phenomenal schools. Versus KIPP, which was a lot more light touch, less about replication per se than about training and empowering great leaders to go on and build their own schools. And what happens in KIPP is you do have some flameouts. There's some schools that do fail, But you also tend to get some of these phenomenal schools that are even better than the originals.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see in practice. I think processes can protect us from catastrophic failure, but they can't necessarily encourage spectacular results. And I think that's the danger.
Yeah, and this and the question is, you know, can we go for spectacular results with every single school in this country, 100,000 schools, or do we have to acknowledge that for some big portion, you know, avoiding catastrophic failure is a pretty good start, and maybe raising the floor to, you know, a higher level is a good start, and then carve out room for, you know, as many as we can to go for greatness.
And that's, I mean, that is the question. What is the goal? Is it preventing failure, or is it cultivating success?
Right. And excellence.
Right.
Okay. Speaking of excellence, this was an excellent Pardon the Gadfly. Thank you, Kathleen. Now it's time for everyone's favorite, Amber's Research Minute. Back to the show, Amber.
Thank you, Mike.
Amber, as a former teacher, have you been wearing red in solidarity with the Chicago Teachers Union?
No, I have been quite aggravated at the Chicago Teachers Union. It does not make me happy. I've been trying to get my friends riled up on Facebook.
Yeah? Yeah? What makes you so angry, Amber?
Because they're getting pretty high average salaries compared to other places. And last I heard, they were working like a 6-hour workday.
5.5-hour day, that's right. They agreed to a longer day as long as other people taught the extra time.
Crazy.
But now they say it's not about the money anymore, Amber. It's about respect. They feel disrespected by Rahm Emanuel.
Yeah, how about respecting the kids and getting their butts back in the classroom?
You know, I don't think anybody who's ever come across Rahm Emanuel has ever felt respected by him. I mean, that's the thing, right? I mean, you're like, look, if this whole thing is because Rahm Emanuel is disrespectful, like, I mean, yes, he is. That's no reason to send 350,000 kids into the streets. We all agree with you, Karen Lewis. He is a disrespectful man.
I'm so sorry he hurt my feelings. Like, we don't have people around here who can hurt our feelings and disrespect us. I don't know. You got to get over it.
Thick skin, people.
Thick skins.
All right, what you got for us this week?
All right, new study out by Catherine Strunk and Jason Grissom that examined teacher salary schedules, how they're structured, and their potential impact on student performance. So, neat little study. They're interested primarily in the extent to which school districts front-load salary increases early in a teacher's career or back-load them, providing higher increases to veterans. They use this nationally representative school data from the 99-2000 Schools and Staffing Survey. A little bit dated, but recent surveys don't have the same sort of staffing information. They use student proficient data in math and reading in grades 4 and 8 from a limited number of states. In short, they find that half of all districts front load salaries, which is kind of a head scratcher. However, the districts that backload do so to a much greater degree. So the average backloading district provides 135% greater yearly returns to veterans than to novices, whereas the average front-loading district provides just 37% greater yearly returns to novices than to veterans. And then they look at the range, and basically there's a higher end range for the backloaders, meaning that they provide even greater yearly returns. Also found that after controlling for differences in state cut scores, backloading districts, they're negatively associated with the proportion of students reaching proficiency benchmarks. Not good. Very small magnitude, though. It's not a huge bump. And also districts that front load tend to have more students achieving proficiency. So the flip side of that, again, relationship's not causal, it's just an association. Another little factoid that they looked at, districts that bargain collectively with teachers unions are more likely to have backloaded salary structures. So in the end, they say, you know, awarding higher salaries earlier in a teacher's career is important to attract high quality teachers who might otherwise have better opportunities outside the teaching field. And they say, look, if you can't get a district to revamp its salary schedule, like do a whole makeover, then at least think about financial perks like loan forgiveness programs and signing bonuses.
I love it, love it, love it. You know, Jacob Victor did a study for Education Next a few years ago that looked something similar, saying, look, even if we can't fight and win the big merit pay battle, if we could front load these salaries, we could go a long way towards making the profession much more attractive to new teachers. You know, and shows that in every other profession, just about, you see huge front loading. In other words, you know, you're a lawyer or a doctor or somebody working at a consulting firm, they might come in making fairly low salaries, pretty much akin to teachers, but they very quickly see their salaries go up. And that's what happens, right? New teachers feel okay about their salaries. raise. After 5 years, yes. their friends have gotten huge raises,
right.
and they haven't, right?
Yeah, that's
after
right.
10 years, it's even worse, right?
Yeah.
And then in most professions, maybe after 10 or 15 years, yeah. then you plateau.
Right.
You know?
You're willing to pay your dues, but not pay them for a really long time.
That's yeah, but right. then if that's not linked to merit, what does that do then? Keeps, I mean, maybe I'm not a great teacher, but I'm encouraged to stay in the classroom for 10 years because I front loaded, then I can go off and yeah. do something else as
but
well.
But if we think that that you know, sort of teacher quality plateaus after 3 or 5 years, then you know it mm-hmm. makes sense to do it that way.
And get to that plateau faster mm-hmm. because then all the teachers mm-hmm. are basically, you know, on average of equal value in terms of student achievement gains.
Right.
No, and if you add this with this idea out there that's saying, hey, give great teachers the ability to teach more kids in their, you know, have bigger mm-hmm. class sizes mm-hmm. and get bonuses for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can start to put together what could be a pretty interesting compensation system without having to, you know, fight any of the bloody battles that we usually talk about.
Right. Because I mean, I think more teachers are sort of, I mean, I would certainly as a teacher say, look, if I'm willing to teach 35 kids, you know, then give me more money. If my neighbor next door only wants to teach 20, then fine. Like, more kids, more money, I think makes intuitive sense to teachers mm-hmm. because we, mm-hmm. you know, teachers just love smaller class size anyway, yeah. and so do parents. So.
Yeah. And hey, I'll skip the teacher's aid if you'll give me extra right. 10 or 15K a year as well.
Well, and it is more work, particularly if you're teaching something like writing where you have to give detailed feedback. Like that volume of work, if you have a bigger class, it requires more hours. So you should be getting more pay.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Now, Amber, was there anything special about the two people that wrote this report?
They are EAPS for our listeners. That is Emerging Education Policy Scholars. So these are newly minted PhDs, about 5 years out or so. And we bring them together along with AEI, Rick's shop over there, and bring them in for a couple times a year for a little policy wonking conference. And it's kind of a win-win. We get to sort of get some fresh ideas around here, and some of them help us do our work. And, you know, we learn from them and they learn from us. So.
Yeah. We'll be accepting new applications probably later this year.
Yes, we will.
All right, very good. Well, thank you, Amber. That was a very interesting one, unlike the really stupid one that you had a week ago.
Did I make up for it? I didn't mention it, but I thought somebody might bring it up.
I couldn't let that go. No, this was really helpful and useful. And by the way, last point on Chicago. Notice your point on the ones that have to negotiate with the unions have these backloaded salaries. That's because we know from Mike Antonucci and others, the internal politics of teacher unions are such that they defend the rights of the older teachers. That's why you see Karen Lewis and the likes looking at job security instead of worrying about things like the new teacher pay.
The retired teachers, too, not even the veteran teachers.
That's right. So. AFT has an office in Boca Raton, right?
Yes.
Or somewhere down there in Florida. That's pretty telling. And I'm sorry, not just the AFT, the UFT, the New York City Teachers Union, has an office where people can vote in union elections in Florida. All right. Enough on the unions, but we'll see if we get to talk more about it next week, depending on what happens. Mm-hmm. You'll find out here. Until then,
I'm Kathleen Porter-McGee.
And I'm Mike Petrilli at the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.
The Education Gadfly Show is a production of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, located in Washington, D.C. For more information, visit us online at edexcellence.net.